And my next guest is our overseas correspondent on the line from Vietnam, Lien Huang. Kia ora, Lien. Welcome back to Nights.
Thanks. Hi, Brian.
Nice to have you back on. COVID is continuing to make a bit of a comeback in your country after you seem to have it licked.
That's right. It's kind of surprised us all because we seem to be doing so well in 2020 when officially there were 1,500 cases, I think, at the time, and 35 deaths for the entire year. Compare that to now, we have 14,000 cases and 72 deaths. So quite a big jump. And this has been the longest wave we've experienced yet. It's 2 months already.
Has that involved any attempt to slow the spread of the disease? Are you in a semi-lockdown situation, as I think you might have been last time we spoke?
Yeah, I don't remember last time, but yes, this is the longest lockdown. We've gone past week three now here in Saigon, and in some other places it was a bit longer. And it's just been kind of one unpredictable thing after another. At this point, I think Vietnam has changed strategy. It was trying to just keep cases as low as possible before, but now it really is trying to import vaccines and inoculate the population.
And do people, is there much disquiet or discontent about what's happening at the moment?
There is, just because, you know, seeming to do relatively well last year was a big point of pride for the country. But now there's just a lot of uncertainty. For the most part, people are compliant with the measures, but once in a while you hear some wild story, like a woman who barred herself in her apartment and had to be taken down by a truck ladder because she didn't want to go to quarantine. So it is getting to people.
Do people vent their anger on social media like they do here?
They do somewhat, less so than perhaps you might see in New Zealand. But as you know, it's a little riskier to do that in a one-party state.
Though I do notice that there must be sufficient dissent for the government to come up with, I assume it's the government, maybe it's not, come up with some kind of code of conduct for the use of social media in Vietnam?
That's right. Just a few days ago, coincidentally, we were marking National Revolutionary Journalist Day this week. And around the same time, not that it one had anything to do with the other, the government also introduced this code of conduct for social media, basically saying if you're Vietnamese and you're online, you should post positive things about the country. And if you work for the government and you see something conflicting with the official narrative, you should tell your boss about it.
National Revolutionary Journalist Day. I must ask you more about that. What does that commemorate?
I guess it commemorates the journalists who covered the war and the revolution, all the various conflicts in the country's history from independence from France all the way through a couple of wars up until now.
I mean, I guess that's interesting because one could also, and maybe this is from the distance of here in New Zealand, think that that's almost a celebration of propaganda for one side of the story.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the winners write history, right? So propaganda is kind of a mixed word in Vietnam, actually. Elsewhere, it might sound negative, but sometimes the term is used freely in Vietnam as just another public messaging tool of the government. You know, propaganda posters, the kind of communist posters you can imagine, those are obviously not seen as a negative thing.
What kind of instances might have happened recently on social media that might prompt the government to say, if you're a bureaucrat and there's something there which doesn't fit with the official line, you should flag it. Flag it to who?
Yeah, it's a little unclear the specific rules and whether these ones will even be enforced. But I'm not sure that there was any one thing in particular, but it has gotten a little harder in the last year or so to say whatever you want online. Vietnam is the only country in Southeast Asia that admits that it has a cyber troop force in its military. 10,000 people or so whose job it is to go online and what they say is fight disinformation from hostile forces.
Right. Which I guess depends on your point of view. Also, I mean, are they fighting disinformation or are they also seeking out those posting this disinformation?
The government would say, of course, that people are free to express themselves, but it's the government and the platform's jobs to fight toxic information. And I guess it's up to them what they want to define that as. I say it's gotten harder to post anything online recently because there has been quite an increase in the amount of content that's blocked on Facebook, including a couple of weeks, actually it was a couple of months last year when the government took down Facebook's local servers until they became more compliant with local requests.
That reminds me of some of what you're saying with the situation with some of the privately owned media in Hong Kong being asked, you know, you're supposed to, you must be responsible for your journalism. And actually when the journalists ask, well, what exactly does that involve? It's very, very vague. But I guess the overall trend is for more restrictions on what one can say in the wider sense, you're part of Asia.
Right. I was listening to a journalist interview in Hong Kong this morning about the Apple Daily printing its last edition because of government restrictions there. And he made a point that the rules are unclear and deliberately so, so that you kind of overcompensate to make sure you're not running afoul of authorities. And when I heard that, it did sound familiar.
And you've got the situation. I mean, it interests me because on one level there's free enterprise. I'm going to ask you some questions about one of your startup companies, which is now worth $1 billion and wants to rival the Chinese app WeChat. And I mean, so in one level, people are quite free to do business, but at the same time, it seems, and the internet makes it easier, perhaps, to start up and make a bit of money and to disrupt the market. But at the same time, it seems at the moment, the trend for the internet in terms of freedom of information is that it's actually shutting down things. There's more concentration of power in terms of what can be said on the web.
Right, that's a pretty hard contradiction to resolve. Of course, Vietnam wants to really develop its technology sector and promote innovation, but at the same time, it's hard to do that if you're putting restrictions on what people can say or research or what it considers innovation to be.
The startup I'm referring to is Kiki, which is what, worth over $1 billion now?
Right. So Kiki is the software that they created, and the company itself is VNG. And they did become Vietnam's first unicorn, the first valued at over $1 billion. And it's kind of all over the place. They made a lot of money through video games and then expanded into a chat app and computer servers, cybersecurity. Quite a lot of services, but the chat app, I think, is the really remarkable thing because of the comparisons to China, where you use WeChat and basically you can't live without it.
Yeah, which on one level sounds really convenient and probably is, but at the same time, can't the Chinese authorities monitor what you do on WeChat? WeChat, if they want to?
I'm sure they can. I've never been to China, so I can't say. But here in Vietnam, the sort of equivalent, and I use the term loosely, is called Zalo Chat, made by this tech company we're talking about, VNG. And one thing I find really interesting about it is that 62 million Vietnamese in a country of 98 million are using this app. And that means it's the only country in Southeast Asia that has its own chat app. All the other countries use, you know, Viber, Facebook, WhatsApp. And so the fact that Vietnam has its own does give the government and local companies certain leverage.
Yeah, I can look at that two ways. And one of them is a bit of envy, because there you are, your own country, and you have your own social media platform. We in New Zealand are pretty much, we're dependent on platforms that aren't from here, and we engage in them all the time, but they're not from New Zealand. I guess we're way too small to even try. But you've got your own. That's a tick in the box in terms of your own sovereignty.
It is a bit. I mean, I think Vietnamese are proud of having that. And it's kind of useful, right? I mean, during COVID, the government rolled out its information campaign on this chat app, because if it wants to reach a bunch of Vietnamese people, where are they all? They're all on Zalo.
Do you use Zalo yourself a lot, Leanne?
I actually don't. I just had to research it for this article I did, but I guess I'm not on social media that much.
And is there any particular reason for that?
Oh, I guess I just started other apps earlier. I chat with people on other platforms, and so I guess I just didn't want to add one more download to my phone.
Do you think that also people, is it quite likely that Zalo has been used also by the authorities to monitor Vietnamese?
That's a good question. You know, I didn't ask that when I went to interview an executive there. I guess it could be as easy, or actually easier, to monitor compared to other companies, but there hasn't been a lot of actual discussion about that.
Do you think VGK is more likely to end up being owned by another bigger country, company, overseas based, not based in Vietnam?
Oh, if the company VNG could be owned other entity? No, Vietnam is very sensitive about foreign ownership, of course. And actually, VNG, a couple of their investors, we believe, are Tencent, which created WeChat. But it's done through shell companies, so it's not entirely clear. And actually, VNG, we thought, would be the first Vietnamese company to list in the U.S. to do its IPO on the NASDAQ. But we've been waiting a few years to hear any follow-up on that initial announcement. And it may be some issues with foreign ownership that are getting in the way.
How do people in Vietnam view the information they get through the news media and also social media? Is there some reading between the lines when people are trying to work out what's going on?
There's a mix, right? So definitely when more social media options came along, there were lots of people who enjoyed having an alternative to the state-run media. And so they were free to express their opinions, share information on their own social media accounts. At the same time, there are also plenty of Vietnamese who think there should be some controls, and they do get very angry if, you know, negative information about Vietnam gets spread. I'll give you one kind of silly example. Recently, the New York Times wrote about COVID rebounding in Vietnam. And the subhead said something like, Vietnam was a COVID superstar, has its luck run out. And people really pounced on that, the Times calling it luck. I mean, it was just a turn of phrase, but people were really offended that someone, some outsider, was saying Vietnam's success was a result of luck rather than its smart reaction to COVID.
Heavens, you could say the same thing about us. And actually, at the moment, we've got a little grey zone. We've got we had a case come to New Zealand from Australia and went back to Australia, and we're waiting to see, because potentially quite a few people could have been exposed to it. We're waiting to see if there are any community cases to come out of it. So, Leanne, we're hoping we're not going to follow you in terms of the trend. I hate to be terribly selfish about that. But thanks very much for joining us again, and good luck with your own COVID cases in the next coming few weeks.
I appreciate it. Take care.
You too, Leanne. It's Leanne Huang, our correspondent on the line from Ho Chi Minh, a.k.a. Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City.